This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to episode 12 of Strong Style History here at Place to Be Nation, the Pro Wrestling Only Board podcast feed. I am your host, Jeffrey Wessel. I host the Strong Style Story podcast and also run the Strong Style Story blog at strongstylestory.tumblr.com. You can find me at Strong Style Story without the E in style on Twitter. With me today are two of our regular hosts, Steve Cash and Lawrence O'Brien. Steve, Lawrence, how you doing tonight?
I'm quite all right. I'm looking forward to talk about Andre here, and that's been a thing we've wanted to do for a little while. So
it has been. We've been trying to get this show done for quite some time, actually. So Steve,
and it's almost relevant because of the documentary on HBO.
Yes, that's that. I was gonna get to that too, but I guess we're not really following the format today. I guess, but.
So let's just get on with
the show. So as we all probably know, earlier in the month of April, HBO finally released an Andre the Giant documentary that had been in production for quite some time, mostly produced by Bill Simmons, formerly of ESPN. Now, I have seen the documentary. I found it to be more of a hagiography more than anything. I'm probably mispronouncing that word. But I think they kind of glossed over some details of Andre's life, both good and bad, and definitely did have more of a focus on the American side of things. So that's what we're here today is. We're going to shine a little bit of spotlight on Andre the Giant in New Japan Pro Wrestling today. Andre did work quite a bit for NJPW. He first started working for them in 1974 and would work with them up through until 1986 with a brief reappearance in 1990, although that was for a special summit show between the WWF, New Japan, and All Japan, and Andre did not wrestle any New Japan talent on that show, for what that's worth. But Andre was known pretty well all over the world. We don't have to go through his full biography, but so let's focus on his career in New Japan Pro Wrestling. NJPW World only has 9 Andre matches online currently, and we are going to talk about a few of those today. So let's go to one of the earliest ones that we want to discuss. I believe it's the earliest one that's available. This was a match for the NWF World Heavyweight title, which is the belt, of course, that New Japan would defend before the existence of the IWGP Heavyweight title. What made this match interesting was the fact that it did not take place in Japan, but actually took place at the Estadio do Pacaembu in Sao Paulo, Brazil. And at this point, Steve Cash, tell us about this match.
Yeah, I don't know much about the background. That's kind of what I was wondering. Like, do you know exactly why it was in Brazil?
Well, as we've discussed on this show before, Antonio Inoki... What the heck? Had some audio suddenly show up here. Antonio Inoki spent his teenage years in Brazil. That's why he's Antonio Inoki. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing he was just kind of returning to Brazil, you know, to present his product. But that really is all I know about, and that's speculation on my part.
Yeah, and that's a very Inoki thing to do, though, trying to spread his influence back to his homeland, or however you want to put it. But this match, I don't know. This match is very interesting because Andre, of course, is much leaner than most of us probably remember him. We watched him in the WWF.
Right.
The one thing that stands out about this match is how athletic Andre was. You know, in terms of the spots they pulled off, you know, like they pulled off that I don't know how you pronounce it exactly, but or describe it exactly, but that snapmare where they throw the guy up in the air and then comes down and whips him over. Like they did that a couple of times, and
yeah, I think I know. Very impressive. I think I know of what you speak. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Like you would see it almost all the time in WCW with cruiserweights.
Right.
The one thing I noticed, and I'll talk a little more about this later, but Andre and Inoki definitely had they had their match. Like they had their match worked out in advance. Like I've seen a couple of other Andre and Inoki matches, and they're very, very similar. So I'm kind of interested to talk more about this later in the match I'm going to talk about later. So we've all seen this, right? So someone can take over from my babbling.
Yeah. No,
I need to tag out.
Yeah, it was a really good match. It was a slow, little slow starting. A lot of, you know, like it's kind of like Inoki's, you know, blueprint there. Like he kind of like throws a hold on, and they were kind of working holds on each other. It just kind of picked up out of like nowhere. It was just like, whoa, like all of a sudden this Andre is like smacking an Inoki around, and Inoki's they're throwing each other into the ropes, and like getting Andre stuck in the ropes and pounding on him, and it got pretty wild. Like,
yeah, I remember one sequence. Yeah, I remember Andre was like, you know, barreling down on the ref too, like he just screaming in his face.
Yeah. There's like that one sequence where like Andre Inoki got him down, and then he was like running up to the top rope, and freaking Andre sprinted out off the mat and just like threw him off the top rope. It was just like, whoa, like holy cow, like this just went from 0 to 100 like real quick.
Yeah, I think one thing we tended to forget, you know, especially since, you know, the majority of how we've seen Andre was, you know, fair enough, in, you know, the WWF, you know, during the peak period when, you know, Andre was not only, you know, he wasn't working as mobile as perhaps he once did, but of course he was also less mobile than he once was, as his acromegaly started to get the better of him.
He was impressive athlete, and he at this point in his career he could go, man, he could just do a lot of different things.
I mean, he was throwing drop kicks and.
This is probably more on Inoki than Andre, but God, he busted out a flying arm scissors.
He propelled off of Andre's gigantic leg and tried to give it like throw like a cross arm bar on at one point. That was just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Inoki tried the bow and arrow, which I had the last.
Yeah.
I was like, really, dude? Like, how did you think that was gonna go?
You get to a certain point and you just think, oh yeah, I've done this before. Yeah, nope.
a little different on Andre the Giant, my friend.
I just balance him just right. Like, hit the angle right, I could do it.
I was laughing, and he's just like, screw it, I'm doing an Indian death walk. Like,
yeah.
Okay, Plan B.
Oh boy.
This is a fun little match. They went at it for quite a while too. It was a pretty lengthy match.
Yeah, it went. Let me see if I can get the official time here. It was 19 minutes 31 seconds. Yeah. Went to a double countout.
The most 1970s finish possible.
Yeah, this may come up a few other times as we discuss the matches that we see. So with that, Antonio Inoki would retained the NWF World Heavyweight title. Now, just for reference, this was not the only time that they... This is not the only time that they were in Brazil. They ran another show on the 19th of December in Londrina, Paraná, in Brazil. See, this is a time when Chris would be good, because he could probably correct our pronunciations on this.
Yeah, he's probably shaking his head right now.
Like, he probably is. I probably just made him more sick, just having to listen to this. But for what it's worth, at that show, Andre and Inoki would face each other again, this time in a 2-out-of-3 falls match for the NWA North American Tag Team titles, in which Inoki and Seiji Sakaguchi would retain, winning 2-1, against Andre and Tony Charles.
Wow, okay. That's an interesting match.
So I don't know if... I don't think that match ever made tape, but...
No, it probably didn't.
If it did, so... So moving on, Lawrence, what was the match you wanted to discuss today?
I watched it was a really short match that Andre had with Stan Hansen in 79. There's also another one they had against each other in 81 that's on New Japan World too. That's a little longer.
But both
matches in that instance are kind of the similar structure. They beat the crap out of each other for, like, you know, not a long period of time, but, like, they, in that period of time, they just, like, would just kick the shit out of each other.
So this was from 1979. This is from May the 18th, 1979.
Yeah.
It was during the MSG series. And, this was in Niigata, Japan. Not sure why they call it the Madison Square Garden series, unless it was just a lot of WWF workers were on these shows.
The New York guys.
Yeah, that's kind of what I think is. They brought in a lot of the New York guys, so they just called it the MSG League.
Series.
Apologies.
Yeah, this also had, like, a non-finish because they just beat the shit out of each other for so long. The ref had to, like, stop it, and, like, it just got out of control. Oh, Freddie Blassie was here too. That was great.
Classic Freddie Blassie.
He was out there with his cane tripping up Andre, and Andre, like, ran after him, and, like, and, like, oh, like, God. Hansen, like, jumped from the apron and, like, gave him a hammer, hammer to the back, and like, they started, like, brawling on the outside, and I think that's about when the ref stopped the match. They started, like, throwing chairs at each other, like having sword fights with the chair. It was just got a little heated. I mean, it's Stan Hansen, so if you expect anything less, then I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, true. Hansen in his way was Lord.
Stan Hansen, when it involved, probably going to be a bar fight, it was a fun match.
And of course, let's not gloss over the fact that this is during a time period when Stan Hansen was actually working New Japan Pro Wrestling, as opposed to his, where he's more famously known in All Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yeah, I know, the very kind of like a tale of two careers for him. So it's kind of funny, like, people kind of forget about the New Japan stuff a little bit, but. Yeah, it was pretty good. It wasn't like amazing, blow you away, but, like, it was he was there, and he did do stuff.
He was there and he did things.
It was fun. I gotta, like, look at the other match that they had there a little more, but I know I started it a little bit before I had to go here, but they were as soon as the bell rang, they were, like, at each other, fucking, like, throwing fists at each other, so it was they just kicked the shit out of each other. So
wowie zowie. Yeah, I confess I did not go ahead and rewatch that match, but maybe I should. Steve, have you seen this one before?
I've seen it probably. It's the one on World, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I probably watched it when they first put it up. Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, was it as wild a brawl as
Yeah, I mean, I mean, yeah, Lawrence pretty much said it. It's they just beat the crap out of each other, but that's kind of what you come to expect with.
Oh yeah, but Andre did Blade too. Andre did Blade too.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
That's right.
Going to mention that. Yeah, yeah. He when he like got like sent to the outside, he bladed and then like so like, amazing. He bladed in like a 7 minute match. Like it's, I thought that was hilarious.
Well, you know, I guess they had to make it outstanding, and if it just sounds
when
like
you're
just,
that.
Yeah.
In...
Go ahead.
I was gonna say when you're that intoxicated, you don't feel it.
Oh my god! Well, according to what we hear, he always got so intoxicated because he was feeling it. You know, that's you know part of his acromegaly, but you know,
solid point.
Yeah. Oh, good grief! Yeah. Well, I guess that's one to get. That is one of the nine that are on NJPW World. In the meantime. The match I wanted to point out here was this one's from May the 27th of 1983 from the IWGP League 1983. This is now just to clarify, this was not the IWGP heavyweight title. This is back when this was still just a tournament, the International Wrestling Grand Prix, and this would be
a precursor
to G1 Climax. Yeah. You know, though. You know, both New Japan and All Japan have run some sort of heavyweight round robin singles tournament since their inception. In New Japan, it's taken on several different names. I think at one point it was the MSG League at that, I believe. But whereas All Japan would continue with the Champion Carnival name pretty much throughout its history. But in any event, this match on May the 27th, 1983, between Andre the Giant and someone else we've discussed on this show before, Ichiban Hulk Hogan. And this match was pretty wild, because even though Hogan was still pretty much a heel during this time in New Japan, the crowd were fully on Hogan's side. In this match, they were chanting Hogan's name the whole match, which struck me as rather odd. I mean, yeah. was Andre always considered like just a stereotypical or even prototypical monster heel throughout his New Japan career?
Every match I've seen him in, he's pretty much been treated as a heel, and he's acted with heel mannerisms. So that's as far as I know.
I mean, yeah, I mean. He never like teamed with Inoki. That seems to be pretty well set in stone. That yeah, it was Inoki against Inoki against everybody. It was always Inoki versus during the early days of New Japan. But in this particular match, Hogan on the cusp of his superstardom, basically had the crowd eating out of his hand. And it got pretty wild. And in fact, at one point, Andre leaves the ring like, yeah, forget this. I'm not wrestling you. He actually tries to leave. And Hogan actually goes after him, which sparks a wild brawl in the crowd. And by the way, I forgot to mention, this actually took place at the Civic Culture Center in Takamatsu, Kagawa. So this was hardly like this wasn't like a Cork and Hall show or anything. This was in Kagawa, but this match was hot, and you know, to no surprise, this match also ended in a double count out.
Yeah, I'd protect everybody.
Yeah, somehow, some way, yes. But did either of you happen to see this match too?
I think I've seen it. I'm trying to remember. I know I watched a Hogan Andre match in Japan. I remember the crowd brawl. So unless they did that in every match, this is probably the match I saw.
Which they may have. I mean, who can tell?
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean,
I think I watched this a while back myself. But it's been a while.
Yeah, well, I mean, compare this to what we would see 4 years later in the Pontiac Silverdome.
Yeah.
And it's almost night and day. I mean, which is, but, you know, ironically, both, you know, both playing the same roles, too. Ironically.
Right, yeah.
Yep. But they, they had it out. And again, you know, we've talked about how Andre was a lot more athletic during this time, and he was still there too. But I mean, and we and Lawrence and I, you and I discussed this when we did the Hogan Muda show back in like episode I think 9 or 10. But yeah, even Hogan was a lot more athletic and, you know, did a lot, showed a lot more as far as actual wrestling during this.
Yeah, no, I mean, he knew he had to do a little more over in Japan. He had to show a little more. He didn't just go out on his charismatic stuff, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. He impresses. I mean, I have to admit, I mean, I had not seen a whole lot of, you know, Hogan in Japan, you know, way back when. I mean, so we can, you know, kind of thank.
You didn't buy that High Spots tape?
No, I guess I missed that one. Did you buy that High Spots tape, Steve?
No, but I know they had one.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't surprise me, but, you know, at the time, I think I was like, you know, it was like another one of those peak, yeah, I'm so sick of Hulk Hogan eras, because, you know, right about, you know, 1998, 99, you know.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Those
were the days. But in any event, so, yeah, this match ended in a double count out. This did seem to happen a lot to Andre. You know, a lot of count out or no contest finishes. Yeah. Although I'm looking down on the list during that IWGP League Tour, and there was actually a match. This was a match, also a double count out finish, ironically, from May the 18th of 1983. This one did not make tape, but it was Antonio Inoki and Hulk Hogan against Andre the Giant and Big John Studd.
Oh, wow. My. Oh my!
Yeah. Well, and wow. then the next day in a league match, Andre would beat Big John Studd on the 19th of May of 1983. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, I mean, I'm kind of grateful that the documentary actually showed some footage from Japan, even though it was like, you know, 3 seconds, and you could only tell because you could see the guys wearing the famous Lion Mark baseball shirts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but you know, I did kind of think that they glossed over it, and we're kind of glossing over it too because he had a pretty storied career though. Let's face it.
Yeah, he wrestled for IWE, New Japan, and All Japan.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, his final match in wrestling was in All Japan.
Yeah,
I believe unless it was in a UWA match. Was it UWA or was it All Japan? I know UWA. Yeah, he was in UWA. Hang on, I'm checking here. Nope, December. It was in December. Yeah, his final match in Japan. Actually, his final match in wrestling was December the 4th, 1992, in which Andre the Giant, Giant Baba, and Rusher Kimura beat Haruka Egan, Masanobu Fuchi, and Motoshi Okuma.
Oh, wow.
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, see, who remembers Motoshi Okuma?
Motoshi Okuma?
Motoshi Okuma. Playing in a young boy role or something against, you know, along with Haruka Egan and Masanobu Fuchi.
Anyone knows who he is, let us know.
Who this obscure All Japan guy is, please write strongstylestory@gmail.com.
Otherwise, that sounds like an amazing match.
Yeah. But for what it's worth, His final appearance at a New Japan show we can discuss. It was, oh, wow, it was actually on my birthday. April the 13th, 1990, in which Andre the Giant and Giant Baba beat Demolition, Axe, and Smash in a 6-minute, 39-second extravaganza.
I actually did just go through that a few minutes, like right before we watched, or before we recorded.
I cannot imagine that Andre was mobile at all at this point.
No, he looked in excruciating pain the whole time.
Yeah, it was almost unfair just to even have him out there at that point in his life. It wasn't even right.
To be fair, so did Baba.
Right.
Yeah, Baba, I think was kind of towards the end there too, wasn't he?
Right. Yeah, so I guess he figured, oh, if I'm freaking dying, I guess Andre can go out there and die too. It's like, oh, that's great.
I actually remember having a conversation with Bill Eadie about this match one time, and he just kind of looked. I mean, this was a long time ago, and he just kind of looked at me and goes, "Yeah, you don't go over Baba in All Japan."
No, you did not.
You had to be like, you know, Jumbo Tsuruta in order to.
Yeah, right.
But
my goodness.
Yeah, so you know, as much as we complain about the documentary glossing over Andre in Japan, I know we're kind of glossing over Andre in Japan too. He did quite a lot there. The problem is a lot of this did not. Yeah, you know, if it made tape, we'd have to search quote unquote sources. Because
and it's not a lot of it did. I mean, it's a lot of that early New Japan. It's harder to find, for that reason.
Well, right. Remember that remember the very first New Japan show. We only could find like 5 minutes of footage of the main event of that,
right.
And that was it.
Right. Yeah. Right. Because it's all over the place, It's like with all the TV companies there and everything. It kind of a lot of the stuff got just lost, I think, to the years.
Yeah, but I mean, keep in mind too that Andre also wrestled during a time period when again it was also still the territory days, and All Japan and New Japan were, believe it or not, considered territories.
Right.
At that time. Like, I mean, it's a different world now. Now they're, they're just what they are. They're not considered territorial.
Yeah, it was about drawing fans to the seats back then, wasn't thought about to really draw network numbers, at that point. Not everything made tape,
Right, yeah. I mean, I know that, both, New Japan always was on TV Asahi. I believe it's always been TV Asahi, and
yeah.
All Japan had NTV right up until the Noah breakaway.
Right.
But yeah, so I mean, it was a different time, and not everything made tape, as we've discovered. I mean, hell, sometimes things don't make tape now.
Mm-hmm.
That we, so a lot of New Japan, man. There have been some New Japan tour shows. I've been like, damn, I wish I would tape this because there's a certain match on there. Like, boy, that sounds really good, but you can't because they didn't tape it. Not even for Battle Men or for Samurai TV. But regardless, I mean, this was a pretty. It was still, even though there's not a lot of footage out there, this was a pretty significant 12-year period in Andre's life where he was doing a lot of work as in New Japan. And of course, let's not forget that New Japan kind of followed Andre a little bit, somewhat, when they put him under the Machine mask.
Oh, yeah.
With something that never gets acknowledged by anybody. Shout out to Greetings from Allentown. That, it was completely ripped off from Junji Harada's Super Strong Machine.
Yeah, right. actually, it wasn't even, an attempt at being coy.
No, it was the exact same mask.
It's pretty ridiculous.
But yeah, so at one point they actually put that mask on Andre briefly.
Yeah, I remember when they did that. That was, oh my god, that's so stupid.
Like, I think, you know, as it was pointed out on an episode
who could, like, ever, yeah, like, who could ever believe, it's like, yeah, that's not Andre the Giant, no, that's definitely not the seven foot tall freaking enormous man in wrestling.
As astutely pointed out by, Peter Winslow of Greetings from Allentown, you know, Gorilla Monsoon tried to play it off, it could be Giant Baba. Yeah, which, you know, A, they look nothing like, B, wrong company, brother.
That's incredible. That is fantastic. Oh my god, Gorilla. Wow, that's amazing. That's like a top 10 like commentary line. I would have lost my shit if I heard that. Oh my god.
Maybe not when we were the kids, when it was current, but yeah, I would, yeah.
Maybe Giant Bulba. Like, oh yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, sure. Sure. Yeah. Who?
Giant Bulba gained about 50 pounds and, like, yeah, sure.
His body got a little less square, and Giant Bulba had a pretty square body. Let's be frank.
Oh my god. Jesus. Oh,
oh my goodness.
So like, and one of the more one more infamous things that happened to Andre in Japan was the whole Maeda match in 86.
Yeah, Akira Maeda really is somebody I don't really have a firm grip on as far as history. Because, you know, my encounters with Maeda just seemed to prove that he was, like, a complete dick. But, yeah, I mean, let's face it, it seems like no matter who you are, after a certain point, it's, oh yeah, and Akira Maeda shot on him. No matter who you are. So, what happened with Andre and Maeda? Is just Maeda shot on Andre?
I think the story goes that it's tied into Maeda being frustrated with his position in the company. Mm-hmm. This is probably around the time he was quitting.
To go form the original UWF, I would assume, yes.
Was this around the time that he kicked Choshu in the face? I'm going to assume it was. He's had a lot of incidents like these.
Oh yeah.
But apparently he was goaded into this by Inoki. And there are also rumors that Andre was drunk off of his ass.
Oh yeah, no, it's and, no rumor. It's no rumor.
Yeah. So apparently it was a combination of Inoki riling up Maeda, who was looking to prove a point and show how tough he is, and maybe also wanting Andre to get the shit kicked out of him for being a drunken asshole. I don't know. That's the rumor. That's the story.
Yeah, like, and just like Maeda was just trying to like just beat him up, and Andre's like probably so drunk off his ass he didn't even feel a damn thing. Like, he's just like, yeah, okay.
Just what, trying to grab what
was
a hold.
That? Was that a fly?
My goodness. Yeah, Akira Maeda is probably a topic for another day, but yeah. Oh, yeah. By himself.
Well, Inoki actually like stopped it too. Inoki was just like, okay, that's enough. Like, Inoki was like, no, please stop.
Holy cow!
Actually like went out to like to the ring and like and was like, what the hell is going on? And then they were like both jawing at him and like He asked Maeda to cover him for the pin after like he got taken down. It was like it was
Holy
at the
cow.
End. That's when Inoki just stopped it. Yeah, it was really
my
bad.
Goodness.
Yeah, it was a disaster. It really was. But at pro, that point,
pro,
you know,
pro wrestling, like, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, that is pro wrestling for you.
It's a beautiful art.
it's a serious sport and art at the same time. Oh my goodness. Well, I think we've kind of rambled on long enough about about this. Even though, again, we were kind of winging it. We had actually had a lot of problems trying to get this show together for some reason. A lot of it was timing issues, but yeah, lack of actual material, and you know, as with a lot of things in pro wrestling, a lot of it is deciding which is mythology and which is fact. Like, for example, according to Box Brown's graphic novel biography of Andre, the acromegaly was diagnosed in Japan. However, the documentary on HBO seemed to have a very not Japanese doctor as the one who diagnosed him.
So yeah, there's a lot of mythology to Andre's bio and story, and
a ton
contradicting stories. And apparently, Andre himself was the one who was telling a lot of these tall tales, like about how tall he was when he was 9 years old, when he was actually regular sized.
Yeah,
maybe it's a little taller, but
he had a big growth spurt. You know, but at first he was, it didn't really take effect for a few years, but yeah. So
Andre is a
combination of a lot of things. You know, Andre is a lot of, you know, there's some legend, you know, just a lot of legends there, but there's some, you know, some of it is real, and you know, some of it is, you know, maybe a little, you know, exaggerated, but Andre is just such an important figure in wrestling, and there's no effort questioning that.
Yeah.
How important he was to the business.
Yeah, well, you know, it's amazing that there's the, you know, there is the one of my favorite stories about him is he had his growth spurt, and by the time he was like 12 or 13, he was not able to board a school bus.
Oh.
So he was taken to school in the back of a truck by one of his by somebody that one of his father's friends, who was the playwright Samuel Beckett, who would go on to write Waiting for Godot. Oh.
My goodness.
Yeah, that's a wonderful story, except I've always heard that France didn't have school buses, so he probably did bring him in his truck, but it wasn't because he wasn't big enough to get on a school bus.
Well,
but it's maybe still an awesome story.
It could be a public transport, you know, a public transport bus too.
Possibly.
Yeah, I mean, either way, he couldn't get on.
I always heard that part of the story was exaggerated, but that's like Lawrence was saying, that's part of the
I know
the mythology.
Yeah, I know that the Samuel Beckett part is absolutely 100% true. So
yeah.
Oh my goodness,
it's kind of one of those things where it's like the story is good enough on its own, but you just got to kind of twist it a little more, make it a little juicier.
Right. Well, and there's no surprise in that Andre has not one, but two graphic novel biographies. There's another one out there that I have not read called Closer to Heaven by Brandon Easton and Dennis Medry. I forget who publishes that. I think Lions Forge published that, actually.
Oh.
But, that's the one I haven't read. But I have, of course, I highly recommend Andre the Giant, Life and Legend by Box Brown. And in fact, somebody else related to wrestling, Box Brown just did a graphic biography on Andy Kaufman as well. So, might be worth checking out. So, I that's pretty much all I have to say about this. I think we could come down to is, you know, even though there's few and there's few matches on NJPW World, and probably, you know, not too many more beyond that that made tape. But I think we can all agree that, you know, it just once again adds to the myth of Andre the Giant.
He worked everywhere, literally everywhere.
Literally everywhere, like actually everywhere.
He was like the attraction. I mean, any place was willing to bring him in because they knew it was gonna draw people. Yeah, it was, you know, he was the guy. Like, he was the guy in the 70s and early 80s. He was the guy.
Yeah, he was the attraction.
And what's amazing is, you know, we in wrestling, we see people of large statures all the time, bigger than Andre. But Andre had this aura.
Yeah.
He may have been whatever it was, 6'9", 6'10", whatever, legitimately.
Yeah, but right.
He had this incredible presence. Like, he literally looked like a giant.
Right,
and
yeah.
Another thing that I wanted to point out that I noticed watching these New Japan matches is his size comes across so much larger in Japan and places besides 1980s WWF for obvious reasons. You know,
are you suggesting, Steven, that anybody?
I'm just suggesting Vince likes big guys. That's all I'm saying.
Performance enhancing drugs.
No, that's not what I'm saying. That's not what the U.S. government was saying.
You guys are awesome. You were saying, Steve.
Life is a lie.
No, I was just saying that he had an incredible aura. I think that's all I want to say.
Okay. Yeah, no, you're right though. Like, I mean, it's crazy. He would be in Australia one day and he'd be in like back in America the next, and then like out in Japan, and then yeah, down in Brazil. Or, you know, it's like, it's crazy. He was everywhere. It was anywhere that wanted wrestling, he was there. For good reason.
That was the time period too. I mean, again, this is the territory days.
Unfortunately, helped lead to his downfall, though. You know, in the end of it, just it probably put so much stress on with his condition, just going everywhere, traveling everywhere, never really getting like probably proper sleep and whatnot, and just never being comfortable anywhere.
I'm a pretty compact person, and I get tired and sore traveling, so I cannot even imagine Andre.
Right. I was exhausted yesterday after being out in New York all day, and I'm like, you know, I'm a little 5'8", I almost said 6'8", I'm like, yeah, right.
Yeah, sure, Lauren. Yeah.
I hear you. I hear you,
Lauren. No, Lawrence, you're not.
That's the dream.
No, and like I'm 5'8", you know, 145, you know, I'm like, oh my God, I'm like, my freaking neck and back, and like, just, I'm so tired, I'm sore.
Well,
I'm
think
like,
about,
God,
think about the plane trip he had to take to Japan.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. I get sore just looking at the pictures of Andre in those plane seats, you know?
God, it's taking up 3 seats or whatever, you know, it's like, oh my God, that's gotta be just hell.
I mean, this was literally somebody who could not escape his own his himself. I mean, literally.
Nope. I know, to be looked at like that all the time, and just basically looked at it like a circus act. It's like, that's got to be, you know, it takes a lot of you know, mental and physical just toll on you. So
yeah.
But yeah, his Japan run was, you know, was pretty cool, you know, and it helped. It really was an important building block for Inoki early on. He was one of those big building blocks, and for Inoki to really start drawing in fans and people.
That's
to the
true.
There's actually one match I wanted to talk about, and since we're wrapping it up, I won't go all into it. But he had a match with Inoki, and I recommend every match I've seen with Inoki. They are similar. But they're all good. I mean, they're hot and good, and But this one in particular was from 1986, and I think it might have been Andre's last match before the match in 90. But you know, and Andre's looking rough. You know, he's kind of a little under a year before WrestleMania 3, and you know, he's looking kind of rough, and but he's still working kind of a very ground-based wrestling style, which surprised me, but it was essentially just a way to let him rest. But Inoki actually put Inoki over with a wakigatame, which kind of surprised me. Kind of funny talking about all these count outs and double ring outs and stuff, and he actually put Inoki over in the end.
Now that was cool. is one of the matches that's on NJPW World too, right?
Yes, I believe that is actually there.
Yeah, and the crowd is hot, man. Like, they wanted it.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, Andre, basically, Andre's there, they're going crazy.
So there's 9 matches. Go watch all of them.
Yeah,
it's only nine matches. Yeah, it's, you should check them all. I didn't have time, but yeah, you definitely should check out all of them just to get a glimpse of, you know, a significant yet not often spoken part of the career of the legendary Andrei Rusev.
Yeah. So. Yeah, like me and Jeff kind of went over when we talked about the first show of New Japan, you know, like Andrei really was one of those guys that Inoki brought in as, you know, as a foreigner to really push forth that, you know, native versus foreigner concept and to try to help bring in eyes to the product. And he was a huge part of that. And it really helped push New Japan forward into the future. And, you know, that was a necessary building block for their future success. So.
Yeah, there's a reason why Andre's a legend, and you know, here's some more proof of that. So, our producer today is Chris Damasano. Lawrence, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at LOB_3, and I actually have something to plug today. Believe it or not, people, I know I never do, but I actually have something else.
Your old one.
So, my buddy, Ian and I, him, you can find him on Twitter at, Skrong Style, SKRONGSTIYLE, almost forgot how to spell there. We are doing a podcast for now. It's titled the Untitled Wrestling Podcast because that's just how we are. We are just going to be covering like a lot of different stuff, really. A lot of old school stuff, maybe some new school stuff, but probably more old school stuff as we kind of go and backtrack to times that we aren't as familiar with and some places, territorial stuff especially that we're not as familiar with. And what we decided to do in our first episode is you can find it on Ian's Twitter. I'll probably retweet the link again or whatever. But we did our first episode on the Doug Summers and Buddy Rose against the Midnight Rockers tag team feud, which is one of the from AWA in 86-87, which is like one of the best tag team feuds ever. So I think we covered about like six of their matches. Pretty much like we did a pretty thorough job, I thought, of covering it. And I think we had some interesting analysis on it. It's a really fun feud to talk about, I thought. And it was a really interesting topic. So please go check it out. I think we did pretty decent for our first episode. So hopefully we're going to cover some more stuff soon and get another episode out there. So. Sorry for the long-winded plug there. But.
No worries. Actually, I would be looking forward to listening to that because I knew you were doing that, but I did not realize it would actually have been released. So I'll definitely try to check that out. Steve.
Yeah, just at Steve Cash. Hustle podcast coming soon.
what year?
What year is it's 2018 right
every
now?
Year.
So
every so, year.
20XX.
All the time.
Going back to our Fist of the North Star discussion from earlier, 20XX, yes.
Yeah. Damn Mega Man here. I was like, what the hell?
Tie it all together.
As I mentioned, you can find me at Strong Style Story without the E in style on Twitter. The blog is at strongstylestory.tumblr.com. We also do the Strong Style Story podcast here at Place to Be Nation, the Pro Wrestling Only Board podcast feed. We're probably going to record the next episode of that after, probably immediately, maybe not the same weekend, but around the time of the end of the Wrestling Dontaku cycle. And I also guested on another show, good friends of our show, SOS Wrestle Talk, Dion and Bunches. We did a I don't know if this is going to be like a pilot for a regular thing, but we tried to talk about anything but New Japan and kind of ended up failing on that. But regardless, we did an episode called Wrestling and Bullshit, which, you know, if you could, you say that like like the Notorious B.I.G. song Party and Bullshit, you know? And wrestling and bullshit. Anyway.
Of all things, I never thought I would hear that come out of your mouth ever, Jeff. That is.
What?
Wow.
What? I never thought
of all things in my life, I would never hear Jeff just start singing along to Biggie Smalls. But thank you.
I love Biggie Smalls. What are you talking about? I love Biggie Smalls. I actually think he's better than Tupac, but that, you know, that's a story for another day. So.
Oh my goodness, you're about to start another war.
No, I'm not going to start a war. I just always preferred Biggie to Tupac. I don't hate Tupac. I just always preferred Biggie to Tupac. I was just, you know, that's just me.
That's a hot take. That's a hot take.
No, coming it isn't.
Wow.
So, okay, you know what? That's for another show. Anyway, you can find Wrestling and Bullshit at soundcloud.com/SOS Wrestle Talk. So go ahead and listen to that. We talk about some fun things like the fact that... Yeah, like low-key actually thinks he's a higher tier of talent than Minoru Suzuki, and the fact that Jim Ross and Tony Schiavone are now once again head-to-head on wrestling TV shows in 2018. So,
oh my goodness. Wow.
So, anyway, thanks for listening to us ramble here on this episode of Strong Style History. We'll be back hopefully in the month of May with episode 13, and on behalf of myself, Chris, Lawrence, and Steve, thanks for listening. Take care. Goodbye.